Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the January 8th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arcola City Council. City to consider raising water rates this month by Ben Crane. Arcola City Administrator Bill Wagoner is looking to propose a water rate increase in light of Illinois American Water's increase across the region. According to council documents, Wagoner will propose a $2 increase for the first 1,000 gallons, $17.25, a $1.75 increase for 1,000 gallons from $11.50, and a 75-cent increase for every 1,000 gallons after 50,000 is consumed to $9.50. Wastewater bills will not see any increases. According to the city, the current average user consumes 4,500 gallons a month, resulting in a $91 bill on average. The proposed rate will bump the average bill under the same parameters to $99. The proposed change will be presented to the Sewer and Water Committee at 6:30 p.m., Tuesday, January 21st. Monday's City Council meeting was canceled due to the weather. The next article, New Director Brings Fresh Perspective and Passion to County Animal Shelter by Ben Crane. At age 25, Riley Weinstock has taken on the role of director of the Douglas County Animal Shelter, bringing a wealth of experience and a deep commitment to animal welfare to the position. Weinstock, who grew up in the nearby town of Cook's Mills, previously worked at Alban Animal Hospital of Charleston for 4.5 years, starting as a receptionist and working her way up to veterinary assistant. During her time at the clinic, she developed a diverse skill set, learning to draw blood, perform x-rays, and assist with surgeries. I loved everything we did at Alban, the emergency situations, the crazy stories we'd get, Weinstock said, but I really wanted to get out there more and help in the community. It was Weinstock's father, Adam Weinstock, the chief deputy in Douglas County, who encouraged her to apply for the shelter director job, sensing it would be a perfect fit for his animal-loving daughter. He knew I loved animals so much and wanted to do more, Weinstock explained. This was a chance to really make a difference, not just in the medical side of things, but in the whole adoption process. Weinstock was aware of the challenges facing the Douglas County Animal Shelter, which had undergone significant changes in recent months. However, she saw it as an opportunity to enact positive change. I knew there would be things that needed to be fixed, changed, Weinstock said, but I like to make things better. I know working in VetMed, there was a lot I could bring, cleanliness, organization, making sure protocols were in place. Since starting the job on November 18th, Weinstock has worked to transform the shelter's operations. One of her top priorities has been implementing the new adoption procedures, gathering more detailed information about potential adopters to ensure the best possible match for the animals. Getting that information has really been beneficial in placing these animals in homes where they'll be happy and safe, Weinstock said. We don't want to risk them coming back or having something bad happen. Weinstock's dedication to the animals' well-being is evident in her work. She has overseen the renovation of the shelter's facilities, including the kennel room, cat area, and storage spaces, all while navigating the potential move to a new location. Having a new place would be wonderful, Weinstock said. It would make it so much easier to keep the animals warm, clean, and comfortable. The way we clean now with hosing down the kennels, it's really hard when it's freezing out, and the cat room is just so small and the ventilation isn't great. We're making it work, but a new building would be a game changer. Despite the challenges, Weinstock remains optimistic and driven, fueled by the support of her tight-knit team and generosity of the local community. We couldn't manage without the community's help, Weinstock said. They've been so generous, donating food, toys, and supplies. We've got a great group of people here. We're all about the same age, and we just love working together. It's such a rewarding job, and I'm excited to keep making things better. As Weinstock continues to navigate the complexities of running the animal shelter, her passion for the work and her commitment to the animals in her care are evident. This is where I'm meant to be, Weinstock said. I get to see the whole process from the animals coming in to the joy of watching them get adopted into their forever homes. It's just amazing. And the last first page story, Claire Meyer to compete at state pageant. The 65th annual Miss Illinois County Fair Queen Pageant will be held on Thursday, January 16th through Sunday, January 19th at the Crown Plaza in Springfield. The pageant will be held in conjunction with the 114th Illinois Association of Agriculture Fairs and Annual Convention. Claire Meyer, 2024 Miss Moultrie Douglas, will compete for the title of 2025 Miss Illinois County Fair Queen along with 74 other young ladies vying for the title this year. Her interview portion will be held on Friday, January 17th. Meyer's preliminary will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, January 18th. Preliminaries consist of speech, swimsuit, and evening gown. The finals will take place on Sunday evening as the top 16 will be announced and the non-finals will be recognized at that time. The top 16 finalists will start over all four categories along with answering three pop questions on stage and a new queen crowned. The reigning Miss Illinois County Fair Queen is Natalie Evans of Jacksonville. She represented Morgan County at the annual pageant held January 2024. As the 64th Miss Illinois County Fair Queen, Evans was the official hostess of the Illinois and Duquesne County Fairs. We'll move now to the obituaries. Monroe L. Yoder, 77, of Indianapolis, Indiana, passed away Sunday, January 5, 2025, at his residence. A service will be conducted on Friday, January 10th at 11 a.m. Central Time at Sunnyside Mennonite Church, 1690 State Highway 133, Arthur, with a visitation from 9:30 a.m. until the service time at the church. Additional visitation will take place on Thursday, January 9th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Greenwood Bible Baptist Church, 1461 Sheik Road in Greenwood, Indiana. Burial will follow the service at the Arthur Cemetery. William H. Bill Collins, 87 years old, was laid to rest on December 31, 2024 at 10 p.m. at his home in Arthur. Visitation will be held Friday, January 10th from 1 to 7 p.m. at Arthur's Penn Station. The funeral will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, January 11th at Penn Station with Pastor Doug Davis officiating. Burial will follow at the Arthur Cemetery. Schrader Funeral Home, Arthur is assisting the family with arrangements. J.C. Jake Siegler, 69, of Tuscola, passed away on the morning of Friday, January 13, 2025, at Barnes Jewish Hospital, St. Louis, Missouri, due to complications from his surgery in his fight against esophageal cancer. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 10th, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola, with Reverend Joe Carter officiating. Burial will be in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January 9th at the funeral home. The family asks that you come casually dressed or in any of his favorite sports teams like Cubs, Packers, or Illini. Jeffrey Michael Borntreger, 59, of Arthur, passed away at 3:08 a.m. on Saturday, January 4th, 2024, surrounded by family at Willow Breeze Hospice House in Mattoon. A celebration of Jeff's life will be held at Penn Station, 122 East Progress Street in Arthur on Thursday, January 9th. A visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. with a service honoring Jeff's life beginning at 6 p.m. Pastor Curtis Flank and the Edwards Funeral Home are assisting with arrangements. James Robert Jim Allen, Sr., 70 of Arthur, passed away at 5:19 a.m. on Monday, December 30th, 2024 at his residence. Visitation was held Thursday, January 2nd at the Edwards Funeral Home in Arcola. Eric Dean Hastings, 61, of Tuscola, passed away on Friday, December 27, 2024, at his residence. A private service was held at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, Tuscola, with Reverend Joseph Carter officiating. Burial was held immediately following in the Tuscola Township Cemetery South. Anna Laverne Waite, 93, of Tuscola, passed away on December 30, 2024, at Accolade Healthcare of Savoy. As per her request, she'll be cremated with graveside services for family to be held at a future date. Another article, Douglas County towns see at least 6.8 inches of snow in Sunday's storm, by Ben Crane. Cities around Douglas County saw significant snowfall Sunday, resulting in school closures, traffic accidents, and communities taking initiative to keep their citizens warm. Newman was the county leader in snowfall, seeing 9.2 inches, according to Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network. Both Arcola and Arthur saw 8 inches, while Tuscola measured 7.5 inches, and Camargo was 6.8 inches. The weather caused a significant uptick in traffic accidents as well. Coles, Champaign, Douglas, Macon, and Vermilion counties are covered by Illinois State Police Troop 7, where they responded to 76 accidents over a 24-hour period during the storm from January 5th at 6 a.m. to January 6th at 6 a.m. Of the accidents, 52 were motorist assists, 22 were property damage crashes, and 2 were personal injury crashes. The city of Arcola opened up their community center Monday as a warming center to keep their citizens warm. According to the city, pickleball was available to those who needed warmed up as well. Other warming centers in the county included the Douglas County Annex, 209 East Van Allen, Tuscola, Arthur Community Center, 120 East Progress, Arthur, Hinsborough Civic Center, 401 Missouri, Hinsborough, Tuscola Community Building, 122 West North Central Avenue, Tuscola, Villa Grove Senior Center, 610 East Harrison Villa Grove. The Arcola Community Center is located at Route 45 and Main Street in Arcola. According to Chana Ray, Emergency Services Director, all of the warming centers are open 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Multiple sporting events were canceled or postponed because of the snow, where school was also canceled across the county. Snowplow crews are still out as Monday, clearing road as a result of the accumulation of snow. It's an article about diet, exercise, and sleep affect the brain by Marty Yackel. Sherry Burkham from the University of Illinois Extension Office in Arthur presented a program on brain health on Saturday, January 4th at the Arthur Public Library. Sherry is a family life educator whose focus is on wellness and brain health. The goal of the program was to learn about brain health contributors that can be helpful at any age, assess personal lifestyle choices that contribute to brain health, and create a lifestyle plan that promotes behaviors that positively influence brain health. She shared methods to improve wellness and brain health, such as good sleep habits, a heart healthy diet, exercise, social and emotional support, intellectual challenges, and stress management. Good sleep habits include having a bedtime routine, limiting the use of electronics, avoiding exercise close to bedtime, and avoiding alcohol and caffeine before bed. A heart healthy diet consists of eating more lean meat and poultry. Any kind of berry is good, as well as carrots, grapes, almonds, and whole grains. Limiting sodium, of course, and choosing healthy fats such as vegetable, oil, nuts, and fish, and don't forget the whole grains. As for exercise, psychologist Art Kramer, formerly of the University of Illinois, recommends aerobic activity 3 times a week. Walking is one of the best ways to exercise, but others can be biking, swimming, gardening, dancing, stretching, and toning, and lifting weights. Social and emotional support are also key to improving brain health. COVID proved just how important social interaction is to our well-being. Calling others or connecting with people in various ways should be part of your routine. Also, intellectual challenges, such as trying not only new things, but increasing the difficulty as you move through a variety of challenges. Stress management. Some level of stress is not necessarily a bad thing and can motivate you to do well, but negative stress is detrimental to both the body and the brain. It is important to find ways to manage stress that might include sharing what is on your mind with a friend, reading and listening to music, and keeping a journal. Another idea is to practice mindfulness, which means paying purposeful attention in the present moment. Breathing exercise can also decrease stress. Ideas for mindfulness and breathing exercise can be found on the internet. Those present were asked what each could do to improve their lives. Some ideas included trying something new, the feeling of accomplishment from cleaning and decluttering, volunteering, bringing laughter into our lives. While many of the ideas mentioned are well known, putting them all together and implementing at least some of them in our lives are just a few of the things we can do to help us enjoy and experience life to the fullest. This is also a good time to remind everybody about the WITS fitness classes held by Sherry Burkham on the second Monday of every month from 3 to 4:30 p.m. at Eberhardt Village. January and February dates are a little different and will be held on the fourth Monday of those months, January 27th and February 24th. Dates for the rest of the year are March 17th, April 21st, May 19th, June 16th, August 18th, September 15th, and October 7th, and November 17th. Classes involve engaging hands-on activities that help boost cognitive function and memory and are free and open to the public. For more information, call 217-543-3755. Another article, Lakeland College accepting nominations for awards. Lakeland College is accepting nominations for the Distinguished Service Award, Pacemaker Award, Retiree Wall of Fame, Distinguished Alumnus Award, Alumnus Achievement Award, and Distinguished Alumni Society. All nominations for the listed awards will be accepted until February 1st. Nomination forms for all awards are available at the college website at lakelandcollege.edu/alumni/award-nominations. Physical copies of each form are available by calling the foundation at 217-234-5376. The recipients will be honored at the annual Foundation and Alumni Award Ceremony in October. The Distinguished Service Award is presented to an individual whose exemplary service and contributions have benefited Lakeland College or its affiliated organizations. Current paid members of the faculty and staff and current members of the board and trustees are not eligible for this award. The Pace Setter Award is Illinois Community College Trustees Association Award that recognizes the accomplishments of Illinois' most recent community college graduates. Nominees must have completed a recognized program of instruction or attended at least 30 semester hours at an Illinois public community college. The Retiree Wall of Fame Award recognizes retired faculty and staff who have made significant contributions to the college or those who have made contributions through their profession or community at the local, state, regional, or national level that reflects positively on Lakeland College. Recipients of the Wall of Fame status must have been employed at Lakeland for a minimum of 15 years and must have been separated from his or her position for a minimum of 5 years. A candidate for consideration may be nominated by another person or may submit his or her credentials directly to college advancement. The Board of Trustees presents the Alumni Achievement Award annually to an individual who has attained outstanding success and distinction in his or her field of endeavor, has gained favorable statewide or nationwide recognition, or has performed service and has proven beneficial to society. The recipient must hold a certificate or degree from Lakeland College and be active in the endeavor in which he or she has achieved distinction. The recipient of the Alumnus Achievement Award will be nominated for the Distinguished Alumnus Award with the Illinois Community College Trustee Association. The Distinguished Alumnus Award recognizes the many success stories of Illinois Community College graduates. Nominees must have completed a recognized program of instruction or attended at least 30 semester hours at an ICCTA member college. Currently serving trustees and presidents are not eligible for nomination. Posthumous nominations are not eligible for submission. The Distinguished Alumni Society recognizes alumni who have utilized the Lakeland experience to make an imprint on their profession or community. An alumnus is anyone who has graduated from Lakeland College or who has taken classes. Another article, Cole Becker Joins Hall of Fame by Daniel Chamness. Most of the country may know Coach K as Mike Krzyzewski, former coach of the Duke University Blue Devils, but in Tuscola, Coach K can only mean Tim Kohlenbecker. The 25-year Lady Warrior coach was selected to the Illinois Basketball Coaches Hall of Fame on his first year of eligibility. He was the varsity head coach for 20 years. He spent 5 years as junior varsity coach. "I never paid attention to the Hall of Fame selection process," said Kohlbecker. "During my coaching tenure, making it to the HOF was never on my radar. I suspect our athletic director, Ryan Hornaday, must have nominated me, and I met the standards that need to be met. Hornaday is on top of things and is supportive of all of his coaches. I could not have worked for a more supportive AD. I thank him for this, and it's truly an honor and it is quite humbling. I had two assistant coaches that helped me for a long time. Justin Quick was a volunteer assistant for 16 years, while Michael Rosenbaum was my assistant for 5 years. They helped us make us a successful team." Kohlbecker would finish the 20-year stint with a record of 407-164, which is a winning percentage of 71.3%. He would win one sectional title and 11 regional titles. In only 1 year did the Lady Warriors post a losing record. He won an Illinois High School Association Class 1A sectional title during the 2007-2008 season. In 12 seasons, Kohlbecker coached the team to over 20 wins each season. Tuscola won the Class 2A regional title in 2015, 2016, and 2017. They won 1A titles in 2006, 8, 9, 11, 12, 22, 23, and 24. "Of all the seasons that we competed, I'll remember the COVID season the most," remembers Kohlbecker. "It was truly a bizarre experience in uncharted territory for everyone. I will always feel for the players of that season who never had the opportunity to play in tournaments or postseason play. Those girls are an extremely talented group, and I believe in future reunions they will talk about the craziness of that season, playing with masks, losing teammates who played one day and tested positive the next day, disinfecting basketballs and chairs, as well as other numerous restrictions and mandates." Kohlbecker started his coaching journey at Tuscola when he was 45 years old. At the time, he was working at the Veterans Administration in Danville. He was working at the Post-Traumatic Stress Department Clinic. "Coaching was never in my life plan," recalled Kohlbecker. "My daughter, Aha, was playing for Coach Stan Wienke, and he was in need of an assistant. I thought, I love basketball, and it'll give me a chance to be with my daughter more. I connected with Stan, and he took a chance." The other things that Kohlbecker loved about the new position was access to the Warrior Gymnasium at the time. The former high school basketball player will be the first to admit that he was really happy with access to the gym at the time. "I was like a kid in a candy store," said Kohlbecker, "of being in the gym. I was not a very good coach at the time. Stan was extremely patient, and I decided I better dive into educating myself about the game." On May 3rd, Kohlbecker will be inducted with 25 coaches, five of which are career coaches. The ceremony will take place at the Illinois State University's CEFCU Arena, which is formerly Redbird Arena. In addition to the coaches being honored, the IBCA will honor former basketball players, media members, select teams, officials, and friends of basketball. "I had so many high points in my career," said Kohlbecker. "I had the opportunity to coach my two daughters, Aha and Samantha, as well as my son-in-law, Justin Bozarth. Being able to coach with your family members, helping or sitting around, watching and strategizing with me, that was special. I had the privilege of coaching three nieces and my daughter for 4 years. My daughter and I had a rule that when a game ended, we did not talk about it for 24 hours. We made an exception if it was a big win. None of this would have been possible without my wife, Lynette. She supported me through all of this. The next article, Illinois minimum wage to increase to $15 on January 1st, completing a six-year transition. 2019 law was Pritzker's first major legislative victory, by Ben Zielinski. The minimum wage in Illinois will increase to $15 an hour on January 1st, completing a six-year transition period since the increase was approved in 2019. Beginning on New Year's Day, Illinois workers making minimum wage would see wages rise by $1, and tip workers will see their paychecks bump to $9 an hour. Youth workers under 18 will work fewer than 650 hours a year will have a $13 minimum wage. The final increase ending a six-year ramp which began with the minimum wage rising from $8.25 to $9.25 on January 1, 2020, puts a bow on Governor J.B. Pritzker's first major legislative victory. He signed the wage increase in February 2019, about a month before being sworn in for his first term, checking off a top campaign promise. Since day one of my administration, I've made it my mission to build an economy that works for everyone, and raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour fulfills that promise to our working families, Pritzker said in a statement. This increase honors the workers who power our state and ensures that they can better support their families, bringing us closer to a stronger, more equitable economy for all. Illinois will be one of 10 states with a minimum wage of $15 or greater, according to National Employment Law Project. 22 other states are also increasing their wages on January 1st. The minimum wage increase is one of many economic changes that have happened since 2019, including effects of the pandemic. Illinois Chamber of Commerce CEO Lou Sandoval told Capital News Illinois he said they have been caused businesses to adjust their operations in a variety of ways, such as increasing automation. I think you're starting to see businesses pivot in terms of how they're adjusting, Sandoval said. You're seeing this at our national chains. Some restaurants, for example, are moving away from larger sit-down areas into grab-and-go. Illinois job growth has been slow since October 2019, according to a November report by the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. The state has seen a net increase of 28,000 jobs from October 2019 through October 2024. That's a growth rate of 0.5% compared to the national rate of 4.9%. The rate of new job postings by businesses at the beginning of the year will shed some light on how the jump to $15 on January 1st is impacting business operations, Sandoval said. To help small businesses with a change, the state provides a tax credit through 2027 to businesses with 50 or fewer employees for wages to be paid to minimum wage workers. The 2019 minimum wage law marked the first increase since the wage hit $8.25 an hour in 2010. Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford, Democrat of Westchester, introduced the bill to raise it to $15 an hour in 2017 that was passed by the General Assembly and vetoed by Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Lightford sponsored the initiative again in 2019. As a state, we have helped countless workers make ends meet, reduce financial stress, and provide a more solid foundation for their futures, Lightford said in a statement. The $15 minimum wage is a testament to our commitment to economic justice and our belief that everyone who works full-time deserves a living wage. The value of a $15 minimum wage, however, was changed since lawmakers acted in 2019. A person making $8.25 in February 2019 would need to earn $10.30 today to have the same buying power after inflation, according to the Consumer Price Index. A 15-hour minimum hourly wage has the buying power that $12 had in February 2019. A person would need to make $18.72 wage today to have the same buying power that $15 had in February 2019. Top Democrats don't say if they will push for new increases. As a senator for 25 years, history has shown my commitment to fighting to ensure workers are paid a living wage. That commitment still holds strong today, Lightford said in an email statement. Pritzker said he supports ideas that will help workers make more money, but didn't commit to supporting any plan to raise the minimum wage further when pressed about it at a news conference on December 11th. We're always thinking about how do you balance the need for higher wages with the needs that businesses have to hire people and do it affordably. But I think we did it the right way back when we did it in 2019, Pritzker said. The new $15 wage equates to a 40-hour per week annual salary of $31,000 before taxes. That equals the federal government poverty level for a four-person household. The poverty level is $15,000 in a single-person household. But according to calculations by a national project by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, $15 an hour still doesn't equate to a living wage in Illinois, based on U.S. Census Bureau cost of living and other cost estimates provided by federal agencies adjusted for inflation. A single adult with no children needs $22 hourly wage to make a living wage in Illinois, while a two-parent household with two working adults and three children would each need to earn $31. In a two-parent household with one working adult and one child, the worker needs $36 to make a living wage, according to the MIT project. Inflation is making it hard for workers to benefit from wage increases, Sandoval said, adding rising wages can also cause businesses to raise prices. They might get the wage increase on one side, but their cost of living goes up accordingly, said Sandoval. Another article, bill aims to reduce state requirements for name changes, by Amnita Iyer. Illinois lawmakers in early January will consider easing requirements for residents to change their names. A move proponents say will reduce risk for victims of domestic abuse, transgender residents, and others. The measurement must clear the full Senate in the first week of January to reach Governor J.B. Pritzker's desk. Otherwise, it must go through the entire legislative process again after a new General Assembly convenes on January 8th. The bill, House Bill 5164, would eliminate an existing requirement to publish name changes with a local newspaper. It would also reduce the state residency requirement of people wanting to change their name from 6 months to 3 months. There are residents in our state who do not feel safe when they are not an adoptee, they're transgender, if they're an immigrant, if they're a survivor of domestic violence, a survivor of sexual exploitation and human trafficking, Senator Ram Vilyam, the bill's sponsor and a Chicago Democrat, said in an interview. So they would like to change their name, and in doing so, we need to remove as many barriers as we can to ensure their health and safety. The goal of the bill is to decrease threats to people who have endured domestic abuse, discrimination, and other threats to their safety. Villavalam said 24 states have already eased this requirement. Planned Parenthood Equality, Illinois, and Brave Space Alliance are pushing for the change. But the Senate's top Republican, Senator John Curran, Republican of Downers Grove, pushed back against the bill. He argues that impounding the records, meaning restricting access to them, should have a higher threshold. Individuals are allowed to petition the court to impound records if they believe public disclosure would put them in harm's way. That process allows individuals to self-attest to hardships and says they may, but are not required, to submit documentation. Why make it permissive rather than a requirement to attach relevant documents to the petition, Curran said during a November committee meeting. But Mike Ziri, Director of Public Policy on Equality Illinois, said impounded records don't disappear from the court records and they're not sealed, but rather selectively available to those involved parties. So it's not a complete sealing. There will still be access to parties and by the clerk as well, Ziri said. In my experience, working with communities, folks who say they've experienced hardship and heartache, they're not making that up. They want protection for very good reasons. The Republicans, who hold a minority in the state Senate, question whether non-citizens with a criminal record could change their names to evade legal consequences as a result of the lowered requirements for the name change. Is this creating a loophole for people who are here who are criminals and part of the thing involved in the trafficking, involved in all these nefarious activities we've been reading about, Senator Sue Rezin, Republican of Morris, said. Ziri said the self-attestation was for impounding the court records of name changes, not to get the name change itself. The Illinois law states that people on the sex offender registry, arsonists, and people on the murder and violent offender against youth list are barred from seeking name changes. The exceptions are marriage, religious reasons, human trafficking, or gender identity. He said a name change still requires the signature of a judge, and the process can take months. Changing your name does not allow you to escape the criminal record. That legislation was passed 2 years ago, Ziri said. That's the top of other requirements. State police already have to check criminal records with a name change granted months later. Villavalam said this bill takes Illinois another step forward in ensuring the health and safety of residents. Now more than ever, given the rise in hate and discrimination across the board, people you know feel targeted, so the legislative work that we can do to reassure them on their safety and health is part of our job, Villavalam said in an interview. As people continue to feel hate, feel the discrimination, and get targeted, we need to continue to take these steps to make sure they are healthy and safe. Amita Iyer is a graduate student in journalism from Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, Integrated Marketing Communication, a fellow of the Medill, Illinois News Bureau, working in partnership with Capitol Hill, Capitol News, Illinois. And we have time for a few briefs. Prayer meeting January 11th. The Arthur Area Promise Keepers monthly prayer breakfast will kick off a new year on Saturday, January 11th at 7 a.m. at Yoder's Kitchen. This month's discussion and prayer topic will be praying for what God has in store for 2025. All area men are encouraged to attend and join in this time of prayer and fellowship. Senior potluck. Arcola senior citizens are invited to attend a potluck at the Arcola Center January 20th. Lunch will begin at 11:30. Seniors may bring a dish to share. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerke saying goodbye and see you again next week.